Due to an audio error, the audio for the Richmond Fund for Children and Youth Oversight Board meeting on November 2nd begins during agenda item F1. We apologize for this inconvenience and recommend that listeners view the minutes for this Oversight Board meeting for information on agenda items A through E2. The audio will now begin.
We also reminded or let council know that we didn't do this work and we didn't engage and embark on this work without really having a vision and some guiding principles. And so we shared with them the guiding principles that not only did our community, but our board helped us create. And so just to highlight a few, the guiding principle around the community needs assessment work. One of them is that community assets are our core strength. Also, we center the needs and dreams of children and youth. So they are the focus of this work. Next slide. So now we just want to talk to you about the community engagement process. Before we engaged in it, we let all of you know what we planned on doing. And so now we're coming back and giving you a little bit of an update on what we did. Next slide. So we tried to collect information to help us develop this community needs assessment in a variety of areas. Patrick is going to talk about the data piece. And so we collected data and information from a lot of different sources to help us get some information about what is going on in the groups. We talked, we did forums, and then we did one-on-one stakeholder interviews. So for the focus groups, these are the different focus groups, and this is based on the priority populations that were outlined in the measure. We were able to, with the help of a variety of organizations, do focus groups. Those focus groups ranged in attendance from 6 to 11, either young people or parents and guardians. That was the goal, not to have a group too big, but it really allowed us to dig deep and ask some really good questions about what were the needs for young people, but also for young people in specific population groups. And so we are just really thankful. We had really great participation from our board. So I want to thank you all for that. So our board members either, our very first focus group, we have board member Lee, who actually was able to co-facilitate the focus group with Asian youth. So we really were, you know, happy about that. We had some board members participate in focus groups. So Johnson, as well as board member Evans, were both able to participate in one of the focus groups. We had board member Sakita participate in a focus group. So I feel like somehow our board members found a way to participate in this process. So we really are thankful, but we really are proud of this work and the information that it provided to us. Next slide. So we also did community forums, and we had great participation from board members again. We had board member Lobo. She was able to help us and provide some really great information to the community who participated in our forums about why she decided to be on the board. We had a welcome from a board member Galloway. We also had a thank you from board member Carrer. So we just, you know, we're really excited. Board member Hegstrom joined, as well as board member or co-chair Inyana joined also. So we just we had great participation. We had only about 57, I believe, participants in total. But that wasn't from lack of trying to get people to come out and join us. So we still got really great information from those who participated. And this is a picture from one of our sessions. I think this was the Wednesday, October 7th morning session. Next slide. So we were also able to do a survey. So all of you helped provide some feedback on the survey questions that we developed in collaboration with HTA around adult and youth needs. We distributed at the end of September, and we really tried hard to push this out so we could get as much feedback as possible. The school district sent something out. We sent something out via various methods, and we paid to have social media posts, and we were able to receive 114 responses, so 89 adults and 25 youth. And that all helped us with the community needs assessment and what the findings are. All right, and gave us a snapshot of some of our current services as well as our gaps. Next slide, please. So we also were able to do some one-on-one interviews. We did some with some service providers early on just to see what their thoughts were and what kinds of services and things were needed. But we also knew that we needed to some of our other individuals in our other population groups, priority groups, that it was difficult for us to connect with via either the surveys, the forums, or the focus groups. So what we were able to do was to have some individual meetings through a participant as well as a staff member from the Bay Area Rescue Mission to look at, to get some information around families and youth experiencing housing insecurity. And then around student support services, we had a one-on-one interview with a Richmond High School student. So we were excited and happy to do that. And I just want to let people know, at least for the focus groups, I forgot to mention this, that we were able to provide people with $75 stipends or gift cards to be able to participate in the focus group. So we really appreciated their time. They gave at least 2 hours of their time to be able to spend with us, and we did a survey afterwards. So they were able to have a $75 gift card from Target, which I hope they spent in Richmond. All right, next slide. Before we talk about, before I share some emerging priorities, Patrick or David, is there anything that you wanted to share that I forgot to share around? No? Okay. All right. So emerging priorities. So HTA, what they were able to do was take all the information from the surveys, from the focus groups, from the one-on-one interviews, and from the community forums. And they took all that information, analyzed it, and they were able to produce a document for us, which was attached to your agenda. And it's a draft document to highlight what the emerging priorities were from that work. And so you see the six priorities that are outlined here: mental health and wellness, education support and employment and training, out of school time, sports and enrichment programming, information guidance and case management, violence prevention, and then basic needs. So what I want to do is kind of briefly go through each one of these to highlight some of the key findings. Slide. So mental health and wellness, what HTA found was that this was a concern that was really addressed in all the focus groups around the need for trauma-informed programming and mental health programming. Some young people talked about their concern that some young people, in order to deal with the trauma, deal with their mental health issues, are turning to drugs and alcohol, and that whatever we end up doing, it needs to be culturally appropriate and have an approach that really meets the needs of our various demographics in Richmond. Around education support, employment, and training, this is something that came out of the surveys, focus groups, forums. Huge desire for us to provide support, especially around the education support. So how to get people access to college, how do we support them in tutoring? And of course, all this information came out after COVID, so we have to keep that in mind. The wraparound services and support that are needed for mainly our high school students and those between the ages of 18 and 24, that are for some of our young people that are immigrants, new arrivers, that we needed to have some accelerated language learning. One thing that I really just, that I remember from working at Kennedy High School was being in the classroom and the fact that there was no really bilingual support in the classroom in high school. And so it was upon the students who spoke both Spanish and English to help support the students that spoke Spanish while the teacher was talking in English. And just felt like a very difficult situation for learning, and that we need to do something much better in our classrooms to provide the support that's needed. Also, what was discussed was how do we get more training and support around employment, that young people need jobs, and access to funds to be able to do what they need to do. So how do we provide more mentoring, more internships, and then just job training overall? Of course, a lot was talked about in terms of just the basic needs around internet and computer equipment. Like I said, this next slide. So the other, the next two are out of school time, after school sports and enrichment programming. So people want low cost or no cost programs in these different areas. And they talked about and shared different types of programming, such as a variety of sports programs, as well as other outdoor activities, such as hiking and gardening, things to get people in nature. Also talked about a lot of art programs. So everything from dance to music to art, theater, those types of things were discussed. And especially in the Asian youth group, there was some discussion about needing a space where people could feel safe and they could be with others that are similar to them in an environment that, like I said, felt respectful and safe. So around information, guidance, and case management, there's a lot there. What was highlighted was the need for information. And I definitely heard this a lot when I sat in on the parent and guardian focus group. So, you know, in some of the forums, people were amazed sometimes at all the different programs and support and services that we have in Richmond, but people don't know about them. So they talked about the need maybe for a one-stop shop, some sort of way for parents, guardians, young people to be able to go somewhere and find out what types of services that they want to access. They need to support their families, that they may need to survive and thrive in the community. So they talked about the fact that it's just difficult to navigate the Richmond environment and all that it is that's here. And that the reason people don't access more services isn't necessarily because they aren't good services. It's not about the quality. It's just that people don't know about them. So we need to do a better job. We as a collectively to provide more information. Also, there was the need for coaching and case management, especially for the transitional age youth, those between 18 and 24. And whatever it is we do, we need to make sure that we do it in multiple languages so that it can reach our very diverse population. Next slide. So the last two are violence prevention and basic needs. So violence prevention, the fact that people are fearful or scared to participate in certain programs because of the location of certain programs. We do, you know, there's different neighborhoods in Richmond. And so people don't always feel comfortable, even though if it's a great service in another community, another neighborhood, don't always feel comfortable going there. Also, some of the barriers to participation are really surrounding the violence that people perceive or are reality in certain communities. And people just, the feeling that people need to feel safe in their community, in whatever program that they're involved in. And finally, the bullying and gender-based violence also came up as an issue for some individuals and what they perceive to be a barrier. Finally, basic needs. This was super high level, basic in terms of people just need help, right? They just need resources to make sure their housing needs are met. These are basic needs. When you look at the Maslow hierarchy of need, we don't go there, but basic needs in terms of what people need to be able to just to survive. People need housing, people need food, medicine, utilities, transportation came up a lot. And that was a barrier also for people to be able to get to some of these wonderful services that we have here in Richmond. And that once you really dig deep and look at the different populations, what they said, some of those needs were different, but they all were around some of the basic needs that we all need to be able to function and thrive in our world. So that is just a really high level synopsis of what came out of all those different methods that we had to gather information. So with that, I'm now going to turn it over to Patrick to tell you a little bit about data and the reason why we're collecting it.
Good evening, everyone. So when we're thinking about data, what we're thinking about is gathering information and looking at that information and then running some analysis and seeing if we see patterns or trends or and things like that. And what we have to be aware of is, first off, there is a lot of data available as it relates to young people in Contra Costa and also in Richmond. But what we're trying to do is also focus on some of the priority populations that are called out specifically within the measure. And our goal is that we can establish a foundation or a starting point for everybody to move forward. And that as we look to supporting organizations going forward via awarding monies through the department and the fund, that this will be the baseline. So we're going to look to maybe impact some of these numbers and see if we can bend the curve in certain ways as it relates to how young people experience and access services, and not just young people, but parents as well who have children and or guardians of young children. So next slide. So in 2019, the city of Richmond put out its biannual community survey. And the question was, which of the following areas should the city prioritize as it relates to supporting young people from birth to 24? And you can see overwhelmingly the first two are kind of in alignment with a couple of the emerging themes that LaShonda called out just a couple of minutes ago. Education and job training were definitely there. Violence prevention and response were definitely there. Health and well-being are there. And then you see there were some need for deportation support for young people and families experiencing or feeling threatened by deportation. Outdoor education and recreation, another theme that kind of called out. Support for young people and building leadership skills and opportunities, support for parents and guardians, environmental health and justice, and also arts and culture. So you can see that based off the emerging themes and the survey just last year, that there is, you know, there's quite a bit of overlap as it relates to people and their experiences and what they feel young people need in Richmond. Next slide. So what does Richmond look like? So there are approximately 108,000 people, 110,000 people that live in Richmond. And what you see here is something we call a slope graph. And so the number and percentage for 2010 versus 2017. And so we can see that the percentage of those who identify as Hispanic or Latinx in Richmond has increased from 35% to 42%. And conversely, those who identify as Black and or African-American has decreased substantially from 28% down to 20%. And once you get below that, everybody else, as far as ethnicity or race, is holding pretty constant overall. And what we can, one of the things we can glean from this is that Richmond is a very diverse place. Overwhelmingly, Richmond is represented by people of color. Next slide. So we have about 110,000 people that live in Richmond, and there are 35,000 young people from birth to 24, right? And I can remember when I was doing this research, you'd never think about that, but there are 35,000 of the 108. So that means about out of 10 people, every 10 people in Richmond, three are from birth to 24. So we have about a third of our population, which is kind of within the purview of the Department of Children and Youth and also your fund. So the work that you all are engaged in is very, very important because it impacts a third of the young people directly. Now, if you consider their parents, right, we're speaking at a much higher number. So we have a lot of people who are either between this age group or who are supporting this age group. So the work that you all do and you're getting ready to engage in is going to be extremely meaningful. Next slide. So when we disaggregate that 35,000 approximately, this is kind of what we see based off of those who identify as male and or those who identify as female. So our largest group within that population, male and female, we see in that bottom right corner is going to be our 20 to 24 year old age. We have over 8,000 young people who are between 20 and 24. And then if you just step up above them, our 5 to 9 year olds, right? These are young people who are just entering school. We have well over 7,000 young people who are between 5 and 9. And so early education, and those who are entering school for the first time, and preparedness is gonna be obviously a concern. And then we have, again, those who are either under 5 and are preschool and toddlers, et cetera. That is our next largest demographic, with, again, over 7,000 young people under the age of 5. Mm-hmm. And just as an aside, I think LaShonda references, but the slide deck will be available if people are taking notes, et cetera. We'll make this available for you all. Next slide. So here is a map of families as it relates to poverty, right? So the federal poverty level is about $26,000 a year. So if you're making that and or less, according to the federal poverty level, they would identify you as living in poverty. And so you can see, maybe not so clearly, but you can see dots on this map. And so each dot represents 10 families, right? And so we can see higher concentrations of poverty along the southern corridor of Richmond. You can see there in the Iron Triangle, up near San Pablo, and also in North Richmond. So we have these areas which are would be identified as having high populations, as high as 38 or 39% living at $26,000 and or less annually. And if we disaggregate this by ethnicity or race, and we do, and we can share that information as well, but for the presentation, we have included it. If we disaggregate it by race, you'll see that those who are most impacted are gonna be those who identify as Hispanic and or Latino, followed by those who identify as Black and or African-American. Next slide. And when we step away from, we look at, okay, we have poverty along certain areas, and then we disaggregate that by race and ethnicity, we see, okay, Latinx is most impacted, followed by Black and African-American. Then what we see is within those groups who are experiencing poverty, single family households that are led by females are gonna be the highest impacted or the most impacted. And so again, this gives us some information about who's gonna be or who might need the types of services and supports as we move forward. It's gonna be single family households that relates to poverty. Next slide. So here is the teddy bear chart. And what this looks at is if we're looking at our early childhood and infant and those early years in entering school, elementary school. So this is relationship to childcare. So there, from birth to 2 is infant. You see that 31% on the teddy bear there. That tells us that of the parents and their guardians that have children from birth to 2, of the 100, hypothetically, if we had 100 in a line who had children from birth to 2, only 31 would have been able to access childcare. If we had 100 parents in line who had children from 3 to 4 and they needed childcare, 100, only 77 would have gotten it. And finally, for those who have young people from 5 to 12 and they need childcare, we have 100 in a line and they need childcare, only 46 would have gotten it. And this is in Richmond. So there is a need for childcare across all of these levels. And you can see that there is quite a demand. Next slide. So once we transition into kindergarten, so we have here this kind of apple figure here. So the largest apple in the middle there, that 44%, that represents the kindergartners that were identified as partially ready to enter. And so when we speak about readiness, we're including, I guess, some of the basic skills and understandings that schools would anticipate what children might come with, as far as maybe just identifying colors and maybe some numbers and letters, right? But it also includes not just that scholastic development part, but it also includes the ability to play with others and behavior and to take and follow instruction, et cetera. That is also included in the readiness percentage you see here. So 44% were identified as partially ready, and 29% were identified as ready for school. Conversely, we had 27%, or well over a quarter of those entering kindergarten, as identifying as not ready. So there is definitely, again, some need there. Next slide. So here is a survey that was done by the district, and it is going to be focused on middle schoolers and high schoolers. And the questions were about learning obstacles that they identify, which are the largest obstacles for them as it relates to learning. And so, and this is pre-COVID. So if you look at the source at the bottom, this was done in spring. I think it was completed at the end of February. So this is pre-COVID. So they identify that tutoring and support for planning in college were the largest obstacles for middle schoolers and high schools as it relates to their learning capacity, followed by access to Wi-Fi and technology, mental health supports, access to food, again, LaShonda calling out some basic services, and then healthcare transition help. And so one thing that we need to remember is that it might be interesting to consider how this list might shift if we were to survey these students right now amidst the COVID and distance learning. I think next slide. So I think I'm gonna turn it back over to LaShonda and David.
All right, thank you, Patrick. And we will be working with the district. I wanna get, my understanding is they did a second survey post-COVID. Okay. And so we will be trying to get that information to see how, if at all, some of that information changed. So with regards to next steps, you had a chance to hear what we've done thus far, and we've been taking you along the journey with us. In terms of what we've done to get to the community needs assessment process, but you can go to the next slide, David. So we talked about the fact that we had to get here, which meant that the Kids First initiative was adopted. We developed our formed the department, the oversight board, all of you were seated, which was great. And that was done. Our first meeting was in 2019. The very end of 2019. Right now we're in the community needs assessment process. We are wrapping that up so that we can highlight some of the needs and service gaps that came out of all the information that we were able to collect. So both primary and secondary data. So what Patrick talked about, plus the information we gathered in all the different forums and focus groups and surveys, et cetera. So the next thing is the strategic investment plan. As I stated, the information collected from the community needs assessment process will guide the development of a three-year funding plan. And then we get to release an RFP at the end or the very beginning of January 2021. And then we have to disperse grants. So organizations have the ability to apply, and that's both public entities as well as community-based or nonprofit organizations have the ability to apply to for some of the funds that we will be awarding so that they can provide much needed services that are aligned with the needs that came out of the community needs assessment process to our Richmond residents. Next slide. So this is a really high level timeline. And the reason why we can't give specific dates all the time is because things are moving really quickly and we need a little bit of flexibility. So we talked about this the last time that we came before the board, that we needed some flexibility to have either just the standing meetings or the standing meetings and special meetings. So tonight we're coming to you, this is your standard meeting. We're coming to you with an update on what we've done, what we learned, what we heard, and telling you what our next steps are. We went to City Council on October 27th, did the same thing. They haven't heard any of the findings yet. The Oversight Board had the ability to hear some of the findings first, some of those emerging priorities before the council did. And that is on purpose. And we will do that every time and provide you with information first before council as best as we can. So we plan on going back to City Council on November 17th. That's when they will actually be able to hear some of the emerging priorities and we'll lay some of the groundwork for the strategic investment plan to them. We will either come back to the board at your standard meeting, or we will have to have a special meeting, but we'll provide you with more information. Right now, I believe the date for the standard meeting will be sufficient for us. We'll come back to you and you will see, have a ability to look at what the strategic investment plan looks like. So based on those priorities that we were able to highlight today to all of you, we're going to package what the strategic investment plan looks like. Is you really package all the information that you've gathered. We give some background on what the department is and what this work is and what we did around the community needs assessment, what engagement looked like. So part of that's in the strategic investment plan. Then we talk about all the data that we've been able to collect and look at, some of what Patrick shared, plus other information that's included in the strategic investment plan. Then we get to highlight and dig deeper into those emerging priorities. So we just were able to highlight for you the six that came out of the information. And we'll dig a little deeper into what those look like in the strategic investment plan. And then some funding needs to be attached to those different priority areas. So really what you're going to see in the strategic investment plan is a coming together of a lot of the information you've already seen. So our goal is to present it to you for sure early December, but it might be that we have to have a special meeting either at the end of November or again in early December to provide you with additional information. And then our city council per the charter has to finalize the final strategic investment plan by December 30th. But because they don't have a meeting that late in the year, often city hall is closed. Their last meeting as of right now is December 15th. So we have to get to them by December 15th. So we plan on going to city council on November 17th, probably December 1st, and then again on December 15th with information so that on December 15th, they can approve the strategic investment plan. We then can turn around and release the request for proposal, which is a grant application. We're going to talk to you about that. Patrick's going to go over that with you for our next agenda item. And then we will award grants to both public entities and or community-based organizations based on applications that were submitted and how they aligned with our emerging priorities and our strategic investment. Next slide, which I believe is the last slide. Thank you for listening to us tonight. That's a lot of information that we shared, but we are open for any questions you have, either it be on what the process has been thus far, on what we found, some of the emerging priorities. If you have any comments, I'm take it all right now. Thank you so much.
I want to thank you for the presentation. It was a lot of information. So now we will move forward with any questions or comments from our board.
I do have one question. Oops, I scared the baby. So I know this was done before COVID. Is there a way to get any more information for now, since we're in COVID now? I know that a lot of people's needs have changed, like you said. How is there a way to get that before?
So that's a good question. So only some of the information was pre-COVID. So all the information that we collected through our community forums, the focus groups, the survey, and the interviews were all post-COVID. The information that was pre-COVID is the data that Patrick talked about, that is pre-COVID just because it's based on when people were able to put out surveys and collect them. I am going to reach out to the district and see if I can get their post-COVID youth truth survey data from them. My understanding is they did two, one pre-COVID, one post-COVID. So I will be reaching out to see if we can get that information and then we can analyze that and incorporate it as well into our survey results. One thing that we want to do is because we know because of COVID and just because of how the world works, things change, circumstances change. And so we want to continue to collect data, not just once every 3 years, but we want to continue to collect it throughout our 3 year process. So maybe we make some grants in year one, but we collect some more data to see, do we need to make any changes throughout the process to really make sure our funding and the and what we provide funding to aligns with the needs of the community so that it's not stagnant. So I definitely hear what you're stating. We completely agree that we need to make sure we're getting the most relevant data. But rest assured that the majority of the data we collected is post-COVID.
And if I could just piggyback on top of that, one of the limitations for Bimber Caprice is that the data that I was able to gather along with HTA team, the consultants, it doesn't really always take into consideration the priority populations, right? So as LaShonda was calling out, like the data that we are gathering is data that just doesn't exist for LGBTQ plus youth in Richmond, right? Or those who are undocumented or experiencing deportation threats in Richmond. And so we're actually doing some really good work here. And so I can appreciate the question. And I second LaShonda's point in that our desire is to continue to do the data collection, because a lot of times there are groups of young people and parents and guardians that support them that are underserved and under-resourced, and we just don't always know enough. And so what we're actually doing is novel in that sense. And I think it is important. I think your point of post-COVID, I think, is well taken in the sense that it echoes the department's ambition and desire to stay on top of a lot of this, so that it's never just we do something every 3 years. How do we stay on top of where young people are, where parents are, et cetera? So
I have another question. So since we are in COVID right now, I know some people are not able to access internet, and I know everything is like through Zoom. So how can data be gathered if not everybody has the ability to do Zoom or any type of technology? Some people just don't have that resource. How does that work?
That's a great question. And I can tell you that David and I worked tirelessly to make that happen. And so for the focus group specifically, and you bring out, it's an excellent point, but I can tell you what David and I did do for the focus groups is that we had to work really, really hard because of that challenge to compile focus groups. And so we had to do a lot of phone calls. For some of the focus groups, Birmingham James, we hosted them at City Hall so that if that was a challenge, people could come and we set up space for certain focus groups. Also, we made sure to communicate with the staff from certain organizations if their membership had capacity, because they let us know that some didn't. And so sometimes they had to select the people that did participate based on their capacity. And there were other moments in focus groups where I had 2 and 3 people on one call, on one phone, there's 2 people sitting around participating in the focus groups. And so we had to be very creative around accessing, but we actually got it done. And as LaShonda pointed out, for some of our demographics, especially those that are experiencing homelessness or mental illness, kind of coordinating focus groups for them was a challenge. If you're experiencing homelessness and you have a part-time job, you work in grade, you work in swing, you work in, you may not be able to participate. And so that was why sometimes we really tried to be as flexible because of a lot of the constraints that you bring up. But I will say this is that, at least in Richmond, I think that there are people who are getting on board as far as the Zoom situation, because it's a necessity, but you bring out an excellent point. And we had to be very creative and do a lot of juggling because of that challenge.
And I want to add, we always have room for improvement. And I feel like if it wasn't COVID, we would have had meetings in person, right, where people could get together in person and you didn't have to rely on the internet and Zoom and other technology. And so unfortunately, we really weren't able to do that. For the future, what we can do is for surveys, for example, we can make sure they're both online and we can do mail outs. I mean, so we can, you know, of course, think more strategically about how we can make sure we get information out. But as Patrick stated, for every single focus group, community forum, whatever, if people needed a way to be engaged, we always, every time, had a room set aside that people could socially distance. We had access to individual laptops, PPE. People didn't really need to access it, but we always had it available just so that we could address that. And then on a separate but related note, something that as members of the Department of Children and Youth and in my role, I am working and having conversations with the school district. So the city of Richmond, San Pablo, the school district are working to figure out how do we do a better job of making sure we can get internet, computers, really internet to communities in Richmond in San Pablo in a way that we're not doing right now. So the department also is trying to do other stuff on the side to help make sure we meet the needs of our young people and their families.
And I'll also share too that, and I don't know if we briefly touched on it before, but we did have a focus group that was entirely in Spanish for the immigrant youth focus group. I know that all our community forums, we had Spanish interpretation available. And I believe our parents and guardians focus group, we had simultaneous Spanish interpretation as well. So there are some things that we tried our best to do as well, similarly to LaShonda mentioned, as if we were in person.
But these are great questions and things for us to make sure we keep in mind as we continue to collect data in the future.
Do we have any more questions or comments? I think a comment I want to address. So I am really grateful for, you know, the hard work that you guys are putting into, like, you know, presenting all this information, especially making it accessible and understandable to the majority of the community. And, you know, I want to echo what Capri said and, you know, really making sure that we set, I think, a time frame to keep, you know, doing these surveys, especially on the needs. Because I think, you know, something that's really disheartening to me is that, you know, in Richmond, we're just trying to survive. And it's, you know, that's really noticeable, I think, in these surveys when, you know, our focus is, you know, where are our needs? And our needs are at basic, you know, basic needs. That means like food, housing, security. Like we're not even looking at, you know, the extracurriculars that might be, you know, accessible, because right now we're just trying to really focus on, you know, surviving, you know, the everyday basic challenges that we have. So, you know, like I said, I'm really grateful for, you know, the report and the way it was presented, and, you know, really think that there's going to be a need to follow up, you know, especially after COVID, because, you know, I agree that, you know, there's a lot of work that, you know, we were restrained to when it comes to surveying the community, but there is a lot of the community that, you know, we weren't able to touch, that we weren't able to get input from because of COVID. And I think, you know, really seeing, you know, what are the needs of, you know, moving forward. And I think they're going to be similar, you know, housing security, you know, food security, you know, just making sure that, you know, their bills are being paid. And seeing how we can, you know, really bring that into one space, you know, where, you know, I like the idea, and I think we have brought that up at the last board meeting about, you know, one-stop shop. How can we make the information accessible of the resources that we're holding onto in Richmond and that are available to the community in different platforms? That means, you know, we need to, you know, put it in print, and we need to have, you know, something digital. But that's also, you know, a working document to where we can, you know, keep adding, and, you know, when services leave, then, you know, we could keep, you know, taking them off the list so that we're constantly keeping up with the needs of the community and also refreshing, and we're not waiting to, you know, go into this document and find that we don't have half the services that we have, you know, in this document. I think that's what we're sometimes finding, that, you know, we're having a hard time, we're having difficulty staying on top of the services and who's providing what. So I think, you know, moving in the direction of, you know, this is where we're able to find the information will give, you know, the bigger community hope to then, you know, start moving in the direction of how can we now support our students into like extracurricular activities that are going to bring the health and wellness into our community to make, you know, the community feel safe, because it's all about relationship building. So I think until we get to a point where our kids are going to be able to socialize together, you know, to we're able to step into the different communities, then we're going to feel, you know, safe in these spaces. And I think because we're so focused on our basic needs and individualism, because we all have basic needs, we're afraid, like you said, you know, of, you know, going into, you know, other neighborhoods, of interacting with other people. So I think, you know, we really need to focus on our basic needs and then really try to, you know, make a road to get to, you know, making sure that we're supporting our youth, you know, also, like I said, and, you know, health and wellness. And, you know, and then moving on from that to build on, you know, the bigger community building. And I think that's my only comment right now.
I also wanted to just say thank you guys for letting me be a part of the forum. It was really interesting and I actually got a lot of information. Thank you guys, Patrick, LaShonda, David, Lupe. You guys have been really great, especially at, you know, answering our questions. It's still new to a lot of us. And I know with COVID, you know, having the impact that it does, I think that it's still really good that, you know, people are still trying to participate and understand, you know, what we can do to make this work. Cause I get it. It's nothing like we've ever seen, nothing like I've ever seen before. But I just really want to say, I really appreciate everybody just taking the time to still just hang in there, you know, and still get what we can get done for these kids. So thank you guys. I really appreciate it. Cause I was asking questions and I was like, I hope people ain't getting frustrated with me either, but I just, you know, it was a team effort. And I really did enjoy myself, you know, and I got to share a lot of that information with some of the people over at PAL, some of the officers that are still trying to work with us with the diversion program. I know there were some things that people mentioned that about resources that they didn't even know that we offered for these kids. So thank you guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Chair Inyana and Board Member Galloway, for those comments.
Can I make a quick comment? I just wanted to say I was really, it's emotional for me to see in the PowerPoint the concern and the reality of our youth turning to drugs and alcohol to cope. The fact that was in the PowerPoint and how many times mental health also came up. And I just hope that moving forward.
I'm sorry, Board Member Lobos.
City aren't always supportive of this this fund, you know, or this department. And the fact that, I mean, if there's any pushback on the fact that one third of our total population are under 24, I mean, there's just no denying that this fund is needed. And so I'm just really enthused to just keep pushing and keep moving forward and get this going and get these resources for our kids and our families. So, and thank you all. What a tremendous job. I'm so thrilled this council saw this. I'm going to have to go on YouTube and watch it. Thank you.
Thank you. And you're right. There is some, you know, sometimes I think what we can perceive as pushback, it's more about politics than it is about the actual program. So just know, if you are listening to council meetings, and I am having conversations on the back end in support of the department, to make sure there's clarity around, you know, eligibility for services and who, you know, who can access funds and what are the funds being used for. And that's why we are presenting the data with, you know, the information we're getting from the community needs assessment process, so people understand, why are we even doing this work? Why is it even important? Why is it important in Richmond? And so thank you for all of that. And I do want to also just quickly state that as part of the department, our role is a funder, right? But we also are a collaborator. And I stated our work with the school district, looking at IT and internet Wi-Fi solutions. But David and I also are working with a group to help, that's helped develop the Richmond Rapid Response Fund, which is to get money from outside entities, so individuals who want to donate, as well as foundations. And so we've been able to raise a substantial amount of money. We want to raise like $10 million. So we aren't even at our $1 million mark, but in a very short amount of time, we've raised, David, you can correct me, I don't know, are we close to like 600,000?
I believe so, yes. Mm-hmm.
600,000 in, like, you know, a matter of months, to help our Richmond residents address those basic needs. So housing, food, utilities, right? And we also are working with our rent program and our housing department and other community-based organizations to help with housing stability, so rental assistance, mortgage assistance. So I just want you to know, as staff, we're also doing some things that you don't necessarily see, but we are trying to help where people want to pull us in, and where we can be a good partner in helping to address other needs that our community members have.
Okay, do we have any last comments for any of our youth board members? Okay, so if there isn't anything else, we'll move on to the next agenda item. Let me pull up my screen.
Board member, Inanna, chair, oh my gosh, I'm just making stuff up. I'm calling you all kinds of stuff. Co-chair Inanna, sorry, if I could just really quickly, even though none of the young, our youth board members had any comments, I want to thank them because they did come out and participate in a variety of ways, once again, throughout our community engagement process. So thank you all. I feel like everyone participated by either commenting on the survey, questions, taking the survey, or joining a focus group, attending a forum, you know, something. So I am really impressed and just excited about the level of input and engagement from both our youth and adult board members. Thank you.
And I want to echo that, LaShonda. Thank you for bringing that up. Really thanking the youth for their, you know, participation. I think, you know, it's been really, you know, it excites me to see, you know, them being present. And I think, you know, we have to keep in mind that, you know, we are all here because we want to hear your voices. You know, we want to know your concerns. And, you know, we're working in partnership to support a lot of the efforts that, you know, our youth need. So I want this to be the space where I hope, you know, we get to hear, you know, our youth take, you know, lead, and us be as a supporting factor to be able to support the needs that they have. So thank you guys for, you know, your presence, and I think your participation in everything, and, you know, this is your space. So I thank you. And like I said, we're moving on, but I think I forgot to ask if there was any public comment for the last item.
There were no public comments.
Okay, so we'll move on to agenda item F2. F2, listen and overview of request for proposals for the RFP or grant application process to award funding to the youth-serving organization beginning in 2021. So do we have any reports?
Yes. co-chair Inyana and Johnson and the department or the Richmond Fund Oversight Board. We're going to provide an overview and delve a little bit into some of the components. Next slide. And I also sent out my little crash course, little 5-minute video. So I hope you all had an opportunity to watch those. What is a request for proposal? It really is, in the larger context, it is a solicitation or a request to vendors or organizations or professionals in a range of areas. And it announces that a project or a job is available. And then it also explains the scope or details of that project or job. And it's basically requesting that an organization then submit information about their qualifications, their ability or capacity to complete the work, also including a budget, et cetera. So that response is considered the proposal. So the request for proposal is kind of like a job announcement where you're looking for a job and then you send in a resume and a cover letter. That's kind of what it is at this scale. For the department specifically, this solicitation or procurement process, and that's all fancy language for just hiring, we're looking specifically for not-for-profit organizations or public agencies that serve youth from birth to 24. So again, this is in total alignment with your purview as Oversight Board. And this RP or this proposal will be in alignment with the strategic investment plan, and it will outline the project areas as LaShonda was talking about, right? So the strategic investment plan will inform what actually goes into the RP. It'll probably almost mirror it in certain ways and set. So, and it'll also explain the scope of the work or the details. And in addition, it'll also speak to some very standard stuff and explain or review the scoring process, what the range of grant amounts our organizations can receive if they're awarded, the terms of those grant limits, et cetera. And in the video that I sent, the City of Richmond, specifically in this context, is special in that we're a government entity. And so our process is that we do have to do a public solicitation. It needs to be as uniform as possible, as available as possible to all who are eligible. Even if we like organizations, we know people who are doing good work, it needs to be a very standard process. Next slide. And so this is kind of how the RFP will kind of work in a very simple sense, from us beginning it to us awarding grants next year. So you all and the department have been a part of this planning project, the community needs assessment, right? Your participation, and that's all work of the department and the oversight board. And right now we're completing, we're drafting the RP, the proposal, which is why it's highlighted there in red. That's kind of where we sit. And then we're going to release it, right? So we have to release the RFP or the grant application to organizations on January 1st. So the RFP has to be available January 1st. Organizations will have a set period of time. We haven't yet decided on that, but it probably will maybe between 6 and 8 weeks maybe to complete the grant application. And then they will submit it. The department and maybe members of the board, selected members of the board, will then review some of those applications, just like you did with HTA, score them, rank them, right? And then we will make a recommendation to the city council, and the council will more than likely approve, and then they move into the selection and award process. Next slide. So here are some RP components. So what will actually be in the application? Next slide. So the application will first off provide an overview, right? So this is just language and some information that we're going to provide to all of those who are interested in supporting young people in some of the strategic areas that some of you all are seeing as emerging, as LaShonda called out, right? Basic needs, mental health, outdoor and recreation, violence prevention, right? we're going to provide them an overview of the city. We'll probably share some of the demographic information that you all are now familiar with. We'll explain what your role and function will be, how the department was structured, and the strategic priorities that fall from the needs assessment. So they will get, that'll probably be the introductory sections of the RFP. It's going to be quite, it'll be kind of large, this RFP application. Next slide. And again, there'll be a section where it's really highlighting the strategic priorities. And so the charter, the community needs assessment, and the strategic investment plan will be the areas where the strategic priorities will be focused. So in the charter, there are three kind of buckets of information that it calls as it relates to funding, right? So there are going to be priorities that come out of the needs assessment, but the work will be packaged in these major areas. One is we have to support young people from birth to 24, and the measure calls out some ranges specifically, right? From birth to 12, 13 to 17, and from 18 to 24, right? Department staff, because birth to 24 is a large gap, that number might be shortened. It might be from birth to 5 and then from 6 to 12 or something like that. But these are some of the areas that are called out. The priority populations you all are familiar with, right? We're talking Black, Asian, Latinx, undocumented, immigrant youth, LGBTQ+, those dealing with mental health or disability impacted, those impacted by the justice system, those impacted by foster care and transitional aid. Those are priority populations. And then there are some uses that are called out. And there may be like 8 or 9, right? Violence prevention, job training, health and wellness, outdoor and recreation, and others. Parent and guardian support, I think there are about 8. So these are kind of be the major buckets. And as you can see from the emerging priorities, that's kind of how they were bundled, right? In these kind of areas. And so the strategic priorities will kind of fit within these categories. Next slide. So the application itself will speak to who's eligible, what the funding amounts, minimum and maximum will be. So individuals can select how much they like to request. And it'll also provide some key dates and deadlines, right? So some of the things that will be in there in addition to when the application is released and when it is due is that we typically host some seminars or workshops for applicants, right? They're kind of technical workshops so that we can review the application with them. We can answer any questions they may have because for some organizations in Richmond, this might be the first time they're applying for a grant of this size. And so there'll be additional dates that'll be included, but that's kind of the general application setup. Next slide. So in their proposal or their application, we'll want an introduction of the organization, right? And we'll want to know their aptitude for completing the expected project work and assignments. We'll be also looking for them to provide a budget, like for those of you that participated in the HTA procurement or hiring process. We looked at the numbers, how much are they charging versus how much. Those will all be criteria in which staff and readers and some of you will evaluate and score. And we'll identify them what the evaluation criteria and scoring guidelines are. And there'll be a set of required documents that they'll need to provide to us, right? They'll need to prove that they're a 501c3. They'll need to prove that they're in good standing. They need to prove they have a board of directors, right? And that they're on board with that. They'll have to show us not only their organizational budget, but they'll have to prove that their budget is what they say it is, either audited financials or 990s filed with the government. It's gonna be, for certain organizations, it might be a heavy lift. I can tell you from our side, it's a lot of documents. So next slide. And so once, if you can just remember our little process flow chart, if they make it through and they're selected, what we'll also be sharing with them in the RP is contract language, right? So what will they be required to do, if they were to enter into a contract. For example, they have to make sure that they're paying people a certain wage, right? If they have young people, they'll have to make sure that they've been bonded or fingerprinted, right? So that they have people who are working with young people who can be trusted. There'll also be some language about timelines for reporting, when invoices are due, when we'll pay, right? And so that's a lot of the contract compliance language, and it is also a lot of language and a lot of pages, but it's just standard language because the city needs to protect itself in as it relates to liability and when we release funds. So we want to do our due diligence. Again, for those of you that saw my video, we have a fiduciary responsibility, that's a fancy word for you, to protect our investment. So that those are some of the possible components. This is for sure going to be there. That'll be a part of the RP. So it'll kind of be a large packet of information that they'll have to work through. Next slide. So again, just want to highlight what our task is. We are going to release the RP January 1st of 2021. And before then, though, we will be coming back, as LaShonda said, at subsequent meetings, giving you all some additional information about the RFP and also seeking your input. So at this time, you may have some questions about the RFP. There may be things that you would love to see included in the solicitation process or hiring process that we put out to organizations. You might have questions about the timeline. So we want to make it ourselves available and also make this process as clear as possible. So if there are some questions about the RP or some things that you think we need to be thinking about as we're drafting the RP, we would love to hear from you.
Patrick, is that the last slide?
This is the last one.
Okay, if I could just, thank you, Patrick, for that. If I could just add really briefly, unfortunately, we won't be able to like show the RFP to the board in its entirety with all the questions and all everything ahead of time, because that would provide some organizations that tune in with an unfair advantage to be able to see it ahead of time. So what we will be doing is bringing you pieces, the larger outline for you to help tell us if we're missing something. So I just want you to understand that we won't be able to provide you with a draft of it because we want everyone to see it at the same time. And as Patrick stated, it can be a lengthy document. We are trying to have our RFP not be, you know, 100 pages, but I can tell you, for example, Oakland's was 80 pages. San Francisco's is 116 for an application to apply for grant funding. So we will not be there, but we also won't have a 20-page document. So I'm just, once you see it, understand that it is, there are lots of components to it. And we are working as your staff members, so we hope you trust us, that we are pulling all the different pieces together. We have some experience doing other grant programs in the city. We're learning from that. We just had a conversation with Oakland. We've talked to San Francisco in the past. So we're trying to learn from people who've done it before, take from our own experiences to put something together that we think will work for Richmond community-based organizations, public entities when accessing these funds. And we make sure we have the information that we need, as Patrick said, so we can protect our investment to these organizations as they provide services to our young people.
LaShonda, there was a question in the chat, and the question was, will fiscally sponsored projects be eligible to apply? And they will, but again, that goes into the section as it relates to required documents. So the organization would have to have, so let's say an organization, the question is fiscally sponsored. So you're an organization, a nonprofit, but you don't have a 501c3, but you're doing work. What you can do is you can partner with an organization that is a 501c3. And what you two do is you enter into a fiscal sponsorship agreement. That organization will serve as a fiscal sponsor to allow you to apply. And typically what happens is there is a fee associated with that sponsorship. So organizations will be eligible to apply. And there was one question about how will organizations get copies? I can tell you for sure we'll be on our website. I think we are working as diligently as we can to make this as digitally and virtually a process as possible. But at this point, we haven't finalized anything, but I can tell you for sure it will be available on the department's webpage.
So is it okay if I ask a question?
Yes, ma'am.
So I think you guys are under a really tight deadline to have this whole thing ready for distribution on January 1st. So when will it go before the, do you have a date when it goes before the city council?
So the good thing is the only thing per the charter that the city council has to approve is the strategic investment plan. They do not have to approve and will the request for proposal.
Oh, okay. That's good news. Okay. Yes. So, and then we only have one meeting between now and January 1st. So will you be giving us portions of this between meetings or how's that going to work?
So we definitely, as I stated, we probably will have to have some special meetings. And it might be where we have, you have your standard meeting on the second and we might have one or two special meetings, or we will have, you know, two to three special meetings instead of your, we are working really hard on our timeline. You are correct. And that's why Patrick laughed. We are under a really tight timeline and we have no ability and flexibility to push anything out because it's in the charter. And COVID, the impact of COVID really did push back our timeline as we tried to reassess and figure out what we were going to do. So we will get everything done. So we are definitely looking and hoping for flexibility from the board. And if we need to have special meetings, you know, we will contact the chair first and then the rest of the board members to let you all know that. And we can, you know, post agenda items 24 hours prior to for special meetings, but we will, if we need to, we'll try and do better than that for everyone. But we will try and like get as much information to you in a timely manner before the council approves the strategic investment plan on December 15th, and then prior to the release of the RFP on January 1st.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
And I would like to say as well, just to follow up I think we have a couple people who are listening and maybe even applying. Make sure that you're signed up for the department e-notify me so that when it is released, you can be notified immediately. I can already tell you to be January 1st, but you might want to sign up because you'll also be noticed when we're going to have some of our technical meetings. It could be that we extend a deadline because we need to, or we shorten a deadline because we have to. So you want to make sure that you're linked to us if you're if you and or some organization might be thinking of applying, so that they can stay abreast to any changes that may happen. I'm copying the link right now and I'll put it in the chat.
Thank you, Patrick. And we're gonna do like Patrick said, we're gonna do a really good job. We have a good list of community-based organizations, public entities that provide services to young people that we have been gathering for years because of our other work and giving out grants. And so we will make sure organizations are aware of it in multiple ways.
Do we have any follow-up questions or comments from any of the board members?
And if I could state really quickly, Chair and Yana, if any of you, if any board members have either applied for grants, you know, or on a board or whatever, have been a part of a grant process, and there are things that you love, hate it, want to share with us, please send us emails. You know, we will take that information as well. And what we also could do, Patrick and David, is we could share our ECIA, our grant application, and guidelines with the group. I'm just thinking out loud right now, just so you can have a sense of what our other city grant applications and guidelines have looked like. Because you won't be able to see this one in its entirety ahead of the January 1st release. But that will give you a sense of the types of questions that are asked, the types of documents that are required, all the city contract stuff. So we can send that out in a separate email to the board.
Okay, well, if there's no further comments or questions, do we have any public comment on this, David?
Oh, we do not.
Okay, well, I want to thank everyone for participating in today's meeting. Patrick, that was a great presentation. But like always, we're always excited to see presentations from the department because you guys put on so much great work. So there's no question to the hard work that you guys are doing because your presentations are really thorough and, you know, really understanding. And I'm glad that you guys are really focusing in on making sure that everything's understandable, that there's, you know, graphics, that there's, you know, pictures, that you guys are accessible to the questions or comments from all of us. So I thank you for the hard work that you guys are doing because we are in COVID and I know you guys are, you know, having to navigate this new way of working. So thank you. Thank you for, you know, the work. And this seems to be the last thing on our agenda item today. So if there's no further questions from anyone else, going once, going twice. Okay, well, I want to, again, thank you guys all, board members, for being present. And this will end our meeting at 7:33 for the Richmond Youth Children and Youth Oversight Board for November 2nd. So thank you guys all for your participation, and this ends our meeting.